This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Matt and Patrick here. Stein in at 4:30. He's apparently going to be calling us from a parking lot someplace on Skype. So expect, I guarantee you, parking lots in Iowa on Skype. That just sounds like a quality connection to me. So we might not have Jeff at 4:30.
Is it going to be from a Casey's parking lot, you think?
Come and go, I think. It's going to be one of those. Maybe possibly one of the two. Or a pizza ranch. I have no idea where he's going to be at. Also coming up here in the 5 o'clock hour, Democrat of the Day is Chris Brazelton, running for Senate. And we will chat with her about her campaign out to the west of the metro area. Patrick, last night was almost a stellar bad night. It was pretty bad as it was for Minnesota sports. But if not for the Detroit Tigers deciding to have a snowball fight out in the field and basically not deciding to throw the baseballs anywhere near where they're supposed to be, Twins would have lost in late innings. T-Wolves would have blown yet another major lead and lost a game, putting them on the brink of elimination. And the Wild, and I said this to Brett, trap game, man. That Arizona was a trap game. You saw that coming from a mile away. Team they should have easily beaten, and they got creamed. It was ugly yesterday.
Did you see the Twins tweet after what happened last night? That was kind of a shots fired at the Wolves in the Wild.
Okay, so what happened is Twins were up into the eighth inning. Then they gave up a 3-run home run, so we were down 3-2. Or 4-3. We were down 4-3 or something like that. Was that right? 4-3?
Yep, 4-3.
And they basically, Sano hits a ball, should have been caught out in right field, bounces off the guy's glove. I think did they call that actually a hit?
Yeah, it was a hit. I don't consider that as much a mistake as some of the other things in that play.
Well, what becomes magnificent is I don't know how tall the catcher thought his third baseman was 12'6", and threw it 10 feet over the third baseman's head. There's no one out in left field. Twins, 2 runs scamper on in. Twins win. What was the tweet?
Well, so the tweet was another night in Minnesota sports with a broken heart emoji and then the video of, the Twins basically saying, not just another night. We won.
Oh, okay. T-Wolves, you're a young team. This is new for you. I get that. But a good team will, and I don't think you're going to be favored in either of the last two games. You're just not. But you need to win both of them. And if you can do that, you're going to show a lot of people a lot of things. And good luck. Wild, you're lucky the Blues lost at Colorado. You are lucky. Because you have no chance at winning that series with the Blues if you're on the road. You just do not. You don't have the ability to. It's be a great series, but it's just not going to happen. So you have to have home ice. And right now you're in the driver's seat still. That being said, enough of sports. I've got a story here. Oh, wow. Who in the world saw this coming? I am shocked. Shocked, I say. Shocked. Unbelievable. Catch this. You are not going to believe it, folks. The Minnesota Department of Human Rights found there is probable cause that the city of Minneapolis and the Minneapolis Police Department engage in a pattern and practice of race discrimination in violation of the Minnesota Human Rights Act. What? Really? You don't say? Oh, in the no blank Sherlock category on today's show. Oh my, you're saying the Minneapolis police engage in a pattern and practice of race discrimination? Oh, what a shock! Oh my God, who could have seen this? Please, seriously, did anyone expect anything else out of this report? I mean, it's the most blatant racism I have seen in any institution forever. And they I will give this report credit. At least they're not trying to hide it or sweep it under the rug. But come on, I mean, we've all seen what the hell's going on over there. And what the union leadership, the mentality that it's placed in that department, for goodness sakes. I mean, dear Lord, go read the Rolling Stone article on Bob Kroll. Just delightful. He was just a what a swell fella. I mean, jackass. It's what a jackass, jackass. It was. Oh, Bob Kroll, I'll make sure your name is basically mud in this town. And before I'm done, no one will want anything to do with you. And it's not me. That's not me making crap up. We're just talking about what you did, you jackass. All right. Anyway, back to the report. The Department of Human Rights announced it would work with the city on a consent decree, which is a court-enforceable agreement that mandates specific changes in a timeline of change. The sweeping report is another black mark of the city and the police department nearly 2 years after the murder of George Floyd. No, trust me, it's George Floyd was pretty much the pinnacle of strikes against the Stallings tape. A mere lie. Jamar Clark, my God! Really? I want to remind everyone, after four police officers murdered George Floyd in the street, and it was on camera, Bob Kroll insisted charges be dropped and those guys get their jobs back. Wow. The report alleges more than isolated incidents of wrongdoing. Jesus.
Wait a second here.
It paints a portrait of systemic rot. I want to remind everyone, too, of something Andy Mannix brought up a few years. Remember when the second precinct was burning down after George Floyd and all that stuff? Reminder, for some reason, the police emptied the third precinct, all the evidence in that place. Yeah, doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? Doesn't make a lot of sense. Here among the findings, and by I hope everyone's got a seatbelt on. Are you prepared? The shocks are just going to keep coming down. Among the findings, racial disparities in how Minneapolis Police Department officers use force, stop, search, arrest, and cite people of color, particularly black people. Minneapolis Police Department officers have used covert social media to surveil black people and organizations in violation of the U.S. Constitution. Oh, but remember, Bob Kroll says it's okay to do stuff like this. I don't know if he signed off on that. My guess is he probably did, but I don't know. But needless to say, think about that. These guys were so out of control, they didn't give a rat's caboose about the U.S. Constitution in their attempts to rein in those people. And those people means black. Minneapolis Police Department officers have consistently used racist, misogynistic, and disrespectful language. Wow. Oh, they had a racist Christmas tree in a precinct. In the lobby of a precinct. A racist Christmas tree. Okay. The report also lays out a damning picture of the department's organizational culture. You don't say. Minneapolis Police Department officers, supervisors, and field training officers receive deficient training, which emphasizes a paramilitary approach to policing that results in officers unnecessarily escalating encounters or using inappropriate levels of force. Now, let me just step back and talk about this one particularly for a second. This is because the Republican Party and the Minneapolis Police Department have been working in cahoots to try to cross-promote each other, okay? And the Minneapolis Police Department has gone out into rural parts of the state and openly encouraged people to vote for Republicans in outstate Minnesota whose main argument for being elected is, I'm going to hold those black people in Minneapolis under control. We're gonna go crack some skulls. We'll put them in their place. That is the mentality in white rural Republican world. That is what they sell. We need to keep those people in line. And the Minneapolis Police Department, through their relationship with the union, with their relationship with Republicans of the state, well, this is not just me saying it anymore. It's the Department of Human Resources. The Human Rights. Yeah, the Department of Human Rights. A little bit more important than HR. Minneapolis Police Department supervisors, field training officers received deficient training, which emphasizes a paramilitary approach of policing that results in officers unnecessarily escalating encounters or using inappropriate levels of force. What they're doing is what Republicans want them to do. This is a Republican dream policing scenario. This is what Republicans dream of. Go in there, military. Remember that from the Bob Kroll letter that former Chief Hartow released, he wanted the Trump administration to throw Governor Walz out of office, install Paul Gazelka as the political leader and give Kroll military authority to control the National Guard and crack down on these people. My God, can you imagine what the body count would have been if that would have been the case? Can you imagine what that would have happened? Thankfully, someone in the White House, informed people, we can't just throw a sitting elected governor out of office just because you guys want us to. Apparently, that's like I say, there was a lot of stories that went along with that. I wrote about this on the blog a few years back after this happened, and sure did seem like there was an attempt to overthrow the state government. When you're talking about paramilitary approach, because that's the solution. Crack skulls! Get the military tank and put a police logo on it. Protect and serve my ass! That's kind of the mentality they've been putting forward for a long time. And there's a reason why question two had a legitimate chance at passing. And frankly, if they put another question two on another ballot, it would probably pass this time around if it was a little more clear. It's because people see this. How many reports did we have of Minneapolis residents, white and black, sitting on their front porch as the police came walking by and, opening fire with quote-unquote non-lethal rounds on regular citizens? The Stallings video shows them attacking the citizens, not because they had done anything wrong, but because they wanted to attack them, for God's sakes. And the implication of the Stallings video, where the police was there to make sure they protected the reputation of white supremacists. How dare the governor and mayor imply that this is them? We know what's really going on. Yeah, and now we do too. Well, we already knew, but now we actually have Human Rights Department saying, yeah, this is what's been going on. Also, the report lays out a damning picture of the department's organizational culture. Accountability systems are insufficient and ineffective at holding officers accountable for misconduct. What? Yeah, how about that? We talked about this a lot with the Stallings tape. That Stallings tape, they knew, not only did they know that Stallings hadn't done anything wrong, not only did they know that, not only did they know that the police were acting more like a street gang than they were a police force, not only did we see inappropriate behavior by them, they tried as hard as they could to throw Stallings in jail, and very quickly a jury said he didn't do any damn thing wrong. And then they fought to prevent the actual tape from coming out. But remember, last year, when they found this out, Arredondo, the chief said at that point, we are going to hold people accountable. Really? It's almost been 7-8 months. Has anyone been held accountable, or did you give them enough chance to transfer to a different police department or retire early so you can just say, well, they retired. What are we supposed to do now? No accountability, even though you knew those officers were guilty as hell. Oh, tell me something I don't know. The entire accountability, they have created a system where a police officer can commit crimes, and quite literally, it's almost impossible for the city to hold them accountable. And it's by design. This is not a fake. This is not someone didn't dot an I or cross a T on a bill. This was by design that cops can basically do any damn thing they want to, and there will be zero consequences for it. I'm glad the Department of Human Rights finally is calling them out on this, but this is something we all knew. We all knew. It just is disturbing. It's the first time Minnesota state agencies has conducted such an investigation of law enforcement agency. The heavy footprint of the U.S. Department of Justice, which also is investigating MPD, is next, and the department can expect close outside supervision for years to come. Can I make that point about, you know, when they talk about all these officers are leaving because it's not friendly? Are they leaving because it's not friendly, or are they leaving because they know the federal government is going to come in there and basically stand and watch what the hell the Minneapolis police are doing? So all the crap cops are running for the freaking hills before all of a sudden they get their leashes pulled. It might be a little bit more of that than we think. It might be a little bit more than that. And they're all trying to get a workers' comp claim as they run out the door as the city has to pay millions of dollars for their crap behavior to the people of this town. Unbelievable. Yeah, I can't wait for the U.S. Department of Justice report. I got to imagine that's going to be a freaking hoot. The unprecedented investigation was launched about a week after Derek Chauvin pressed his knee into the neck of George Floyd laying on the street at Cup Foods and kept it there for more than 9 minutes. The cell phone video of the incident went viral. Chauvin was convicted of murder last year. Three other officers are convicted of federal court of violating Floyd's civil rights. They go on trial in June on state charges. The investigation examined the death of Floyd and others similar to it since at least January 1st and continuing to the present, requiring investigation, said the Minnesota Department of Human Rights charge says. So we now have a report that says it's bad. And I want to make sure, I'll tell you what, let's take a break. I want to make sure we understand what the fallout of this is going to be. And shocker, the Republicans are not going to do a goddamn thing about it because they want these Minneapolis cops out there to campaign for them in rural Minnesota because we're keeping those people in line. That's the reality of it all. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I got my precincts mixed up a little bit earlier there, but you get the point. There has been an atrocious track record. We've all seen it here. And we all knew it. We've all known it. We've all known it. I mean, this was a police department that was created this way. Don't let anyone fool you. This was created this way by incompetent leadership with an ulterior motives and politicians that were basically saying, as you give us the talking points, we'll give you as much money as you want and zero accountability. And that's how you get this. So now we have this Department of Human Rights report that says, you know, Minneapolis Police Department is a mess. It is a disaster. It is just atrocious. The behavior is unacceptable. And the Republican Party of Minnesota will do nothing. That's right. Absolutely nothing. They won't. They'll ignore this report completely or even go on the offensive to try to attack the report of how dare you hold these people in any kind of consequences for their actions. How dare you? George Bailey needs to be waterboarded. You know, that's. They all do sound like Potter eventually in my impressions. Let's just be honest about it. Will somebody put... No, never mind. I'm not going to do that. No, they're not going to do a damn thing. I mean, for God's sake, this is the same Republican Party of Minnesota that when it came to the least they could do with common sense police reforms, which would be make it illegal for someone who is part of a white supremacist group, the KKK, or the Nazis from being able to be a police officer in the state of Minnesota, they refuse to do it over and over and over again. The least they could do. The Public Safety Committee Chair, my God, wasn't Chamberlain photographed flashing the white power hand gesture? This is by design, people. This is by design. I believe he was. I believe that's Chamberlain. I have to go back and take a look at that photo. No, this is... Nothing's going to happen because this is... You are seeing what the system was designed to do. Give outstate Republicans talking points for elections which are draped and steamed in racism. While giving the Minneapolis Police Department unlimited funds and zero accountability when it comes to actually holding people accountable. And reminder, and I want to remind you, everyone, as when we were talking about the Chauvin trial, there was a legitimate chance that he was going to be found not guilty because, and I've said it before, the way the Republicans have written the law in this state, a police officer can be off duty, drunk as a skunk in a bar, say, I gotta show you. Go home drunk, get a gun, drunk, come back, drunk, go into the bar, still drunk. And as long as they basically, the excuse they can make for gunning that person down is like, sure, I said I was going to plan on doing it. But the second I had got in there, he raised his hand. I thought there was a weapon. I had to defend myself. It's a tragedy. Don't look any further. It was just a tragedy. It was a good kill. Good kill. It was a tragedy. That is the world they have created for themselves. And like I said, you say to yourself, oh, all these police officers are retiring because the city's not nice to them. Are they retiring for that, or do they know what's coming? That the rot to the core in the Minneapolis Police Department is so rampant. It's not one apple. It's the bunch. That they're running for the hills before all of a sudden the federal government comes in and says, hey, you guys can't be racist pieces of crap anymore to the city that you're policing. And these guys, how dare you say that we can't do that? How dare you? I'm going to leave. Maybe that's it. We don't know. We don't, do we? This was by design. This is, and none of this report should be a surprise, nor should be the realization that the Republican Party of Minnesota will do everything in their power to make sure this system never changes. Never changes. Because they love their campaign ads with Minneapolis cops. And Minneapolis cops love that money and that lack of accountability. That's why they were so terrified of question two. Is because it was the first real threat to this system that was put into place. And they spent a ton of money, brought in fake local neighborhood people to try to argue like, this was a bad thing. And I'm not saying that question two should have passed necessarily. There were some big problems with question two. But like I said, if they clean up some of those problems with question two and they put that back on the ballot come up here in November, I have very little doubt in my mind that would pass. I have very little doubt. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We turn our attention to national news when we do return. Jeff Stein, hopefully from a parking lot somewhere in Iowa, when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. So still no Jeff, huh? I mean, this could be a situation where he is in a meeting or it could quite literally be. He is trying to call from an Iowa parking lot. I mean, there is a legitimate chance. there's no chance there. I actually, it's funny. I will go up to the lake up in northern Minnesota, north of Virginia. So you're getting out there a little bit. And I'll get five bars easy nowadays. I mean, I remember, you always did. I will take that same phone. I've gone down to Iowa. I've been in Ames, which is not a small town. Iowa State University is down there. I'm in Ames, Iowa. Couldn't get a signal to save myself. It's like, what are you doing down here, man? So we'll have to see if he gets out of this meeting or if he's stuck in the meeting or is it he's trying to call from an Iowa parking lot, which even Rube's, have you ever been to Rube's Steakhouse down there? It's a fantastic place.
I've never been there, no.
Although I'm kind of one of those places, if I'm going to pay the money for a steak like that, yeah, someone cook it for me, okay? It's like, someone cook it for me, cut it up, and feed it to me, will you? All right, because that's what I'm paying for. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I will say, one of the things I wanted to talk with Jeff about is the series of stories that have been coming on out right now from the Republicans in regards to, and okay, let's make sure we're very clear about this. Why did the Republicans over the last year fight tooth and nail to prevent anyone from getting access to their phone records? Well, we now know the reason why is because they were guilty as all heck, and that there is a shocking amount of them who want to, you know, that are fascist. I mean, as a matter of fact, Morning Joe this morning was making the comment talking about how the fact that there is, you know, a shocking amount. It was like 30 or 40% of the Republican Party identifies as fascist now. You had a Republican candidate in Oklahoma argue that Dr. Fauci should be put in front of a firing squad. Killed. They should kill Dr. Fauci for the crime of all crimes, trying to help people with solid medical advice. Because God forbid Donald Trump, you know, disagree with you. You have Republicans across the country labeling Democrats pedophiles. Not because they are. I mean, as a matter of fact, I'm really hoping some of these Democrats sue the crap out of them, because I understand politics, but that's not covered under freedom of speech. You cannot make up such outrageous lies about the opposition party and run with it and act what you're trying to do is the stink of the Republican Party is so bad that you have to create a boogeyman that's worse. So you're trying to label the Democrats as Satan worshiping baby killer, pedophile, Nazi, Hitler. Oh my God, it's every bad thing that's ever happened. Thanos. I mean, that's where they're at. They're trying to, that's what their narrative is. And that's for that reason. They themselves can't defend how bad they are. So what they're trying to do is rewrite the rules to say, sure, we tried to overthrow American democracy, but the reason why is because it was a cabal of Nazi pedophiles. And that, so in the end, I was the real hero. That is what these people are doing. I mean, it's right from Russian propaganda. My God, what did the Russians say about Ukraine? Oh, it's all Nazis. It's all Nazis. No, you attacked an independent country. On top of all of that, you now have a former Trump administration official now calling for mass arrests of Liz Harrington, spokeswoman and former President Trump, delivered a speech at a press conference by QAnon proponents this weekend. She called for the mass arrest of the people who stole the 2020 election, considering there is no evidence anyone stole anything in that election. What they're calling for is a roundup of the usual suspects. Just any Democrat, throw them in jail. These guys are marching right towards, this is fascism 101, folks. This is when you go back to the beer hall pushed in Munich and the rise of Hitler. This is the same exact thing. They convince them. They basically go on out there and say, it's all these people. You got to go arrest them. This is, you got to go shoot them. You got to go do these things. And then when someone does shoot Fauci, all of a sudden it's like, well, I didn't say he should be shot. I just said that he should be held accountable. No, you said he should be shot by a firing squad. Well, after he being held accountable, not before. Wait, why would you think I'm a bad person? I love Jesus. That's kind of who these people are. And now Marjorie Taylor Greene. And one of the things which is really ugly about the latest text message leaks that we've gotten via the Mark Meadows release. The reality is that there was an active, after January 6th, there was an active element of the Republican Party that was desperately trying to get Trump to invoke martial law, lock up Joe Biden, lock up all the voters that voted for Joe Biden. I mean, maybe not this extreme, but kind of. Lock up the voting machines, declare him, have Trump declare martial law, declare him the winner, and be done with it. And by the way, it should be noted, the reason why none of that stuff went any further is it's pretty clear the Joint Chiefs of Staff said there's no way in hell we're going to turn the military on our own people. And that's the only way they could do it. Sure, you might get a few people from, say, oh, I don't know, the Minneapolis Police Department, who might go along with, all right, we need to start arresting people. But the reality is you would not be able to do mass incarcerations in this country to throw out an election, especially throwing political leaders of the opposing party in without the military behind you. And the military let Donald Trump and the Republican Party know very quickly, no, we sure as hell are not going to do this. And by the way, if I can bring up another quick little side note to this little gem, how in the hell is it that everyone isn't chomping at the freaking bit at this point to vote these clowns out of office? How is it? What the are the video games you're playing really that good? Is the Kardashian show on Netflix real? Is it Netflix or Hulu? It's Hulu. Is it really that good? Came up as a suggestion for me. What the hell? No, not going to happen. It really is amazing when you look at what we now know took place. This was an intentional attempt to overthrow the government of the United States on January 6th. The attempt was going to be to basically steal the ballots, steal the Electoral College ballots, destroy them, basically get them compromised. I guess they, for some reason, the White House, and once again, it was an attempted overthrow conducted by the stupidest people on the freaking planet. And that, by the way, is about the only reason why it didn't succeed. Because even when Mike Pence was going to say, no, I'm not going to do that, Trump and his supporters, who included a crap load of elected Republican officials, were going to try to basically overthrow the election by getting rid of the Electoral College votes, saying we now can't determine who won what. Henceforth, the election's thrown out. We'll determine the next presidency in the House, which will vote via state and their congressional delegation, and we're done with that. That was by design, folks. But even scarier is not only that, but in the weeks afterwards, Republicans calling for martial law, calling for an actual military overthrow of the government to install Trump as president uber alles for the rest of our lives. We'll have another election coming up soon. Oh, it looks like we're about to get beat badly. Oh, we can't have another election until all this hate calms down. Once you guys stop hating on us, then we'll have an election. So until the poll numbers show we can win, we can't have one. I mean, that was what this country would have turned into. It would have turned into freaking Hungary. It would have. Today have people out there telling people to gun down Democrats, arrest other people. Is that Stein? We got him? My God. I'll tell you what, let's take this break. Let's get that break in really quick. We'll reset this issue. I'll bring it up with Stein, find out which parking lot in Iowa he is in. Is it a Casey's? Is it a come and go? I'll put a fiver on come and go, okay? 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. I feel the earth move
under my... Jeff.
I'm hesitant to play the whole song because we might lose him in this parking lot out there. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert, noted author. Can find his books at Next Chapter Books. Iowa Politics Report, Iowa Business Report comes from KXEL. Where are you at right now?
Yeah, I'll have a quarter pounder with cheese. I was at a meeting at the University of Northern Iowa, an institution of higher learning, and I'm in a parking lot outside a building. So it is stable, and there is no come and go, and no quick star.
Is there a Casey's? What's closer, a Casey's or a come and go right now?
In Iowa, there's always a Casey's close
by. Damn it!
It doesn't matter where you're at, right?
Patrick wins five. All right. So this week I was just going on a little rant there, as I do, and I was talking about.
Really?
Oh, I know. I was talking about the fact that what's funny to me is these Republicans today who frantically were trying to prevent their phone records from being seen, and now that we see what was really going on, that not only was there support for 1-6, there was a calls for martial law to be declared before Trump walked out of the White House, something that only didn't happen because the military is like, there's no way in hell we're going to go with that. You have these notes that are coming on out. And the entire Republican narrative now is, I don't recall sending that tweet. I don't recall this. And, I know that they clearly have been practicing. It was only when Marjorie Taylor Greene had evidence that she had done these things that all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's right. Now I remember. Yes, I did call not Nancy Pelosi every bad word in the book. You're right. I did do that. I thank gosh my memory got jogged there. So, it really is kind of a sad state where this country is at right now.
Well, here's what you need to know about all of it. And it was the GOP caucus with Kevin McCarthy today.
Yes.
Now, here's how I understand the story. Kevin McCarthy said in a closed-door caucus that included Liz Cheney, who very well may have been the one to record it, legally, nothing's illegal here, but he basically floated the option of the president resigning after 1-6. And all of these things that he flat out denied the week before. And then here came the tape. So they had the closed-door caucus of the Republicans where you've got McCarthy having a problem with the truth, which we understand is not new. Supposedly, the caucus gave him a standing ovation after he talked about the whole issue. Now, if that doesn't tell you where the party is at, nothing else will, because you've got people like Gates and Taylor Greene going to Ohio to campaign for J.D. Vance, who got the endorsement of Donald Trump. Clearly, McCarthy wasn't on Team Trump during that phone call, but he's apparently smoothed everything over enough. Good luck buying, and I don't mean to impugn this business, because my family was in the auto business for years, but McCarthy is the worst used car salesman, and he could very well be the next Speaker of the House.
Well, I don't think he's going to be the Speaker of the House. I think that there's enough of an upswell that wants to place Trump in there. And as a matter of fact, I don't know why Democrats across the country aren't putting that on the offensive that, I'll give a great example. Pete Stauber up in Minnesota 8, Republican, fairly, still a very easily Democrats could win that district, making Stauber go on the record saying, oh, I would never place Donald Trump in as Speaker of the House, or I'm for it. I mean, and I think that if the Democrats hammered away on that more, I think that very realistic reality that Trump could become the Speaker of the House, that I think that would be enough to probably cost the Republicans the House.
Well, Trump gave them cover already by saying he's not interested. And so if you were to press a Republican, they would say, well, it's a moot point. President Trump's not interested in being Speaker, so I don't deal in fantasy. I mean, that's the cover that they would have. But to your point, why not hold their feet to the fire a little more? Because if, in fact, McCarthy, who many have not trusted for a long time, if he is coming undone at this early stage, it's a fair question. Think of it this way, Matt. How many Democrats have been asked, would you support Nancy Pelosi in another term as Speaker? It came up last time. Don't you think it'll come up this time? I mean, obviously, why wouldn't people ask Republicans about their choice for Speaker? And why not make it McCarthy versus Trump and just see what people say?
Well, and two things. First of all, Trump has also said he doesn't want his Twitter account back. Oh, sweet Lord, please. He wants that back on Twitter like you wouldn't believe. That being said, the Democrats just, for some reason, have a very hard time of saying, wow, look, the Republicans did this and they had a lot of success. Let's not do that. Let's do something far more complicated and diluted that no one will understand. And then we'll see what we can win with that. And you're like, oh, Jesus, really? But, you know, it's this is low-hanging fruit. I mean, if they went out, I mean, because the Republicans want Trump. There are a lot of Republicans that want him as Speaker of the House because it also puts him in the line of succession for the presidency. And then all of a sudden, and think about what we're talking about here. If the Republicans control the House, the Republicans control the Senate, they bring up Biden and Kamala Harris on fraud charges and say, we need to throw them out. They're going to be impeached. We've got to throw them out, send it up to the Senate. Next thing you know, they've had the coronation of Trump for a second term.
Well, it's a nice little fantasy, and
is it a fantasy? Is it a fantasy, or is it? Because I can tell you, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Louis Gohmert, Paul Gosar, Jim Jeffers, Rand Paul, none of these guys, I think this is a fantasy for. I think they would love to be able to do that.
Well, how about it's their fondest dream at night? You want that one? I mean, that's we can go that direction. But here's the thing with Trump on Twitter. Worst thing for Trump is to have a way to get on Twitter, because do you know how much money he has tied up? And obviously, like with most things, it's not his money, but in Truth Social, which has the Truth Social, Matt, has a worse rollout than CNN Plus. Okay. Mm-hmm. People were on waiting lists. They can't get on the service. I literally, in the meeting I was just in, a young woman, probably about 25 years of age, she's in marketing. She signed up for Truth Social because she had heard about it. She apparently did not know it was tied to Trump. She just heard this was a lot of people are talking about this social media. So she signed up. She was on a waiting list for 4 months. She got on it this week. They finally got around to it with her iPhone. I say that because Android users can't even use it yet. She said, there's nobody on it. Why would anybody do this? And you've just hit upon why Donald Trump says, well, no, I'm going to stick with Truth Social. Because he got a bunch of investors. He recruited Devin Nunes to give up a pretty safe congressional seat to preside over this sinking ship. He's got to say that, or else it's going to be fraud with his investors, and he's got enough with a contempt of court finding. In New York.
There are so many people that are willing to fall on swords for that guy that I don't know if he would be in too much trouble. But I think, too, I mean, I can understand your point on that. This is a guy who wants validation, and he's not getting it on his he's not getting it on his social media site. And, you know, they said the minute Elon Musk bought Twitter, all these Republican Congress people got tons of new followers, and a lot of the Democrats lost followers. I knew a lot of people that were saying, I'm done, I'm bye. They're heading over to, I don't know, Discord and Snap. I have no idea what the hell half these things are, but they're on these other sites. It doesn't mean, I don't necessarily think that he is, but I know he wants to come back because let's face it, that was his golden age. That was when he could go on out there and every tweet was reported as news by the news media. He controlled the news cycles. Right. He was able to do that. And, you know, that's the validation he wants to have back again.
Oh, he certainly does. But I think number one is he'd rather make money off of it. And that's through, where apparently he has ownership in this Truth Social. Now, if he does not have a great financial interest, well, sure, different story. The thing about these Twitter followers, I don't know how many people on the right, some of them claimed they were thrown off of Twitter. Some just simply left. The minute Musk shook hands with the board of Twitter, they all yelled, hey, I'm back on Twitter.
Yeah.
He doesn't own it yet, you idiots, first of all. But second, this variation of followers, you now have this conspiracy of all of these people on the right who stayed on Twitter saying, what do you know? I've got this big increase in followers. They must have, you know, taken off the throttling down of my account. Or maybe your devotees thought it was safe to come back. Could be that, too. It might not be something sinister at Twitter. The whole thing is just getting in the way of actual issues. Yeah. But that's what has become the parlor game these days.
And reality, that's what become the Republican Party today. Marjorie Taylor Greene is becoming more of a rising star. And her followers love her even more for sitting there and saying, I don't recall. I don't remember. I don't recall. I don't remember. Even when they had proof positive, she had. And now you got this text where she was encouraging martial law before Biden took office. I mean, that's where there is a substantial portion of the Republican Party that were like, we're done with democracy. We can't stand Trump lost. We are willing to overthrow the government to make sure that we stay in power forever. And that is some scary stuff, man.
Well, and to the point about Congresswoman Taylor Greene, as a lawyer, I don't want my client making declarative statements under oath. If you deny something and they've got documentation that wasn't brought forward because you didn't actually think there was documentation, that's called perjury. By saying, I don't recall, it sounds a lot better than taking the Fifth Amendment. So they are akin to the same things, but you do have to say, how stupid are you if you don't recall these key facts? See, a person on the stand like that can't win, Matt, because if they say something and it's proven false, they're cooked for perjury. If they say, I'm taking the Fifth Amendment, everybody assumes that they're guilty. If they say, I don't know, then they sound too stupid to be serving in a deliberative body. The key is just don't put yourself in that situation, and she gladly puts herself in that situation all the time.
Moving away really quick, just on Russia here, because I want to make sure. I think one of the things that's happened in the last few days, it's kind of been pushed to the side. Russia's now is claiming that they're being attacked, or they're going after another former Russian province, Moldova, I believe it was, and then they've also shut down the gas pipelines to Poland and Bulgaria. This does not seem like it's ramping down, even though Ukraine has become kind of quagmire for them. This does seem like a major escalation across the board that they are trying to, there definitely is a larger plan.
Anyone who thought that Russia was going to walk away from this fight without some sort of face saving just doesn't know history, doesn't know Putin, doesn't know what dictators do. He obviously thought he could crush Ukraine. That didn't happen. So he's going to make them pay for it, and he's going to make any of their friends pay for it. And it starts with bombings for the home country. It continues with turning off the gas. I mean, this is not going to end anytime soon, so long as he has a shred of power. Anybody who thinks that he's weakening, they're probably wrong, Matt.
Well, I will say this. His military is not exactly top-notch. He does have nukes, though, which is a different story. But if it came into a military war fight, I have no problem with the U.S. Army. They would destroy them because that Russian military is not looking very strong at all. Jeff Stein, once again, I'll put the Iowa Politics Report out there. Jeff, I appreciate you calling in from the parking lot. We'll talk to you next week. Hour 2 is coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Matt Patrick here on your Wednesday, 952-946-6205. We'll spotlight, even though it's a short interview, we'll spotlight that interview with Stein there. We've got a lot in there in just about 10 minutes, so make sure you're listening for that. We'll get that up on our streaming pages, iTunes, as well as SoundCloud, all the places you can hear the podcast. Joining us right now is our Democrat of the day, Senate District 29, which is just out to the west here of the metro area. As a matter of fact, my kids are playing the sports conference. My kids play against it. It's got Buffalo in it. So that's one of the towns there. Delano, Buffalo, Montrose, Howard Lake, Maple Lake, Monticello. They're all in Senate District 29. Chris Brazelton is kind enough to join us. She is the DFL endorsed candidate, Democrat of the day for today on your Wednesday. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I like your district a lot. I go apple picking down in Montrose. There's a really good apple orchard over there that's in your district. I've been up to Maple Lake. I love it. Some really nice lakes there. I've had friends, longtime family friends in Buffalo. There's a lot of cute in your district out there.
There is. We are brimming with cute.
Since you are close here, I mean, a lot of people know, of the cities I just mentioned here. Why don't you give us a little bit more about yourself? Who exactly is Chris Brazelton?
Well, I live in Delano, which is just over the border. I'm about six blocks over the Hennepin County border into Wright County. I am married. My husband and I have grown children, 11 grandchildren and probably counting. Mm-hmm. And I am a child support officer with Hennepin County. My grandfather served in the legislature for 20 years, and they were the proudest times of his life. So it's something that he would, if he had lived to see this, he would be very proud if I were able to follow in his footsteps.
Oh, that's wonderful, by the way. And yeah, was he out in that area, the Delano area?
No, actually, he represented Northeast Minneapolis from the mid-30s to the mid-50s.
That's very cool. That's wonderful. I do love it when we get some less legacy candidates here because, you know, obviously for you, I'm going to presume there's a lot of impression that you got there, and you see the value in trying to serve the people of your community.
Absolutely. And public service is something that has always been very important to me. I've been an advocate in the domestic violence prevention field. I've worked in children's mental health. As I said, I've been a child support officer for many years. So I don't think I was put on this planet to line my pockets. While I certainly want to live as comfortably as anybody else, I really do believe we're here to leave the world a better place, and we found it.
Okay, so obviously a legacy impact here on your decision to run for Senate District 29. Was there any other, and you also have some really great ideals that you've expressed. Were there any other ideas that came up that you say, you know what, 29, it's my time. I'm going to run for Senate here.
Well, and actually I did run in 2020, so this mm-hmm. isn't a first for me. I received a phone call about an hour before the filing deadline in 2020. The person who had intended to run hadn't followed through, didn't sign up, and wasn't answering his phone. And I got a frantic call saying, we really need a candidate. Would you please consider running? So I did run in 2020, a very short campaign against the same incumbent. And so this isn't a first for me, but I've certainly had some time to get a little bit more experience in the process.
And let's talk about the district. How much did the district change with the redistricting they just did?
Well, we lost Rockford Township, so some of the northeast side of Wright County has moved off into Senate District 30, and we picked up a couple areas in Meeker County, so it's shifted a little bit further to the west.
But
we still have Delano and Buffalo and Monticello and some of those same cities that you mentioned are still part of the district.
Well, and it should be mentioned, too. I mean, the metro area is growing. I know a lot of people in because it's cute. I mean, Delano's cute. Rockford's cute. Montrose is cute. Buffalo cute. There are a lot of people that are moving out there. It is becoming, you're starting to see a population growth out there because people are saying, you know, well, I work on the west side, so I can move further out. And they're taking advantage of the district. You are seeing the growth out there.
Absolutely. And now since COVID, there's another move of people that don't need to go in and maybe don't need to commute downtown at all that are able to work from home, which brings us to one of the big issues is broadband internet. We really need access to it, not just here in just west of the cities, but all over the state. There's so many people that could, you know, economies in these small towns that can do so much better if they have access to internet, so people can work from home and farmers can run their farms as they do now on the internet. Kids can do homework. But just like rural electrification 100 years ago, you know, some of the conservatives saying, oh, we can't afford to do this. Well, we can't afford not to.
Well, let's be honest. They're saying it can happen in the wealthier neighborhoods, but overall it doesn't. And you just said it. I mean, we just had 2 years of showing why broadband is so important. Education, healthcare, just the quality of life. You need to have that there, and it just shouldn't be for the wealthy neighborhoods in any given community. You need to have it everywhere, and because, like you said, it's clearly, and I think the comparison to when they expanded electricity across the country, it's spot on. It is the way modern business, modern culture, modern education, modern healthcare, they're all done via broadband, and if we don't have that, then we're failing our people.
Oh, absolutely. I have nieces and nephews that went to school in a small town in northern Minnesota, and you can't possibly bring in and have classes in Mandarin Chinese and all. There's so many different things that in order to be competitive in the business world, kids need access to these high-level classes, but in these small rural schools, there's just no way you can have teachers that can teach all this stuff. So you've got to bring them in through the internet to make it cost-effective. So again, it's going to be saving us so much money and making us more competitive if everyone has access to that high-quality education that you can get by bringing in experts from further away via the internet.
What are some of the other issues that you're looking to champion for Senate District 29?
Well, childcare is huge.
Yes.
I mean, the costs have just skyrocketed. And I absolutely believe that childcare workers deserve a living wage. So, you know, we want all of our workers to be able to do well. And yet, so many of the employees who would need to use that childcare end up spending their whole paychecks on childcare now, if they can find one at all. So I think we really have to put more resources into subsidizing childcare. You know, so many advanced countries around the globe have figured out how to do this, and I just can't believe we're as far behind as we are in providing access to quality childcare and pre-K for our young people. And then all through beyond pre-K, you've got the need for quality education and fully fund our secondary education, primary and secondary education. And then we've got post-secondary. We've got kids who end up running up so much debt, they can't buy a house, they can't buy a car, they can't really participate in the economy. And so how do we expect our economy to grow when we start people off with such high debt?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's just so on so many levels, and you know, the infrastructure with, you know, just not just roads, bridges, but you know, the transportation of the future, green energy. There's so many investments we need to make to be competitive on a global market. We just can't be afraid to make those investments, and now is a really good time with having some surplus to work with.
Chris Brazelton is joining us right now, Democrat of the day, Senate District 29. I want to bring up two issues that are near and dear to 29. First of all, let's get into senior care, because one of the things that we've found, I mean, we saw a lot of unfortunate gaps in our healthcare system that were exposed with the pandemic. One of the things that is a real problem is quality care for seniors, elder care in rural Minnesota. It doesn't seem to, you know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of movement to try to get this fixed. This is something, making sure that seniors are being taken care of in whatever capacity we need to in their later years. As you have aging communities, which are in Senate District 29, you need to make sure that's a priority.
Absolutely. Whether the seniors are able to stay in their homes longer with some extra help, or having senior care assisted living available. I love some of the places. My own parents were in a place that had advancing levels of care available to them as they needed it. People want to stay in their homes, but the homes aren't necessarily remaining in good repair. So it becomes, puts so much pressure on seniors and their families to try to keep them, you know, safe and healthy and supported in those senior years. And many families to trying to make ends meet, you know, with both adults working in the family, it's very difficult to take in a senior member of the family without getting some extra support. But we seem to be so reluctant to look at the costs of doing that in an equitable way.
The other issue that's going to affect your district, and this is, I'm an old ag broadcast fan. I know that's kind of a guilty pleasure of mine. I love agricultural broadcasting. And because I can, you know, because for me, you see the need and how it represents community and helps out. So ag issues are important ones. Your margins are your standard farmer today are they're barely getting by. The farmer, them, their spouse, they're having to work out of the farm to get, you know, to just be able to afford healthcare. They got to work at some other company so they can get healthcare.
Right.
We need to make farms more affordable. And we also need, I think it's time for the state to step up and offer a farmer's healthcare program for state farmers that can basically be purchased by them so that they can work on the farm without having to go work another 8-hour job to basically be able to have health insurance.
Absolutely. Well, and we're all finding any small business, whether it's a family farm, which is probably one of the, you know, smallest business as far as employees, but any small business, you can't remain profitable or nimble in this economic environment unless, you know, with a really small risk pool. So, again, this is another thing other countries have figured out, how to have larger risk pools through universal and single-payer health care. But there's ways we can do this, and we have to take a look at those ways, build larger risk pools so that insurance coverage is affordable for the farmers, and not just for health care, but mental health care. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that we're seeing with, you know, the returning vets, with farmers who are isolated. There's just,
yes,
the mental health issues are becoming more visible in our society through so many sad ways. When we look at the suicides, when we look at, you know, people who are just falling apart in a very public way. But healthcare's got to cover that. It's got to be a holistic healthcare where all of the needs are being met. And this is something that we've waited far too long to have in put in place so that people can get those needs taken care of. And again, that's the family farmers, that's the small business owners. You know, it's not something that makes sense to count on our employers to be the ones who provide those risk pools anymore.
You know, one of the things is you bring up mental health issues and farmers and stuff. And by the way, we should mention as well, the students who have been on pandemic that there as well, there's a growing mental health crisis there. But so I'm out in Buffalo. This was last year. I had a kid that had a sporting event when we first after Delta, and we opened things up saying, well, thank God this is over. Yeah. Funny story. Anyway, I was out in Buffalo. We were for a sporting event. I was there early. It was a gorgeous night. It was summer, you know, just the, you know, and you, when you're getting out into rural Minnesota, it's just as beautiful as it gets with the sun setting, and you get the nice colors and the growing crops and everything. And I went down a road, and this scared me. I went down a road, I counted 7 farms and 6 for sale signs. And I said, mm-hmm. What in the world is going on? And I talked to some people out in rural Minnesota, and they said, pandemic bills, healthcare bills are wiping out people's families. They're wiping out people's savings. It's the margins are just not there. There is a large crisis going on right now in our ag sectors. And frankly, the Republican Party has no intention of trying to help those farmers out.
Yeah, I find it just incredibly short-sighted. You know, I've got families, you know, who are work for Cargill. We're a part of the Cargill family, actually, is a relative of ours. You know, I don't want our whole globe to turn into corporate farms, small family farms that can be nimble, that can have, you know, start looking at the ways in which we can stop leaking greenhouse gases into the environment. So, you know, with cover crops, you know, the smaller farms are able to do a lot more of that and care enough to do a lot more of that. But we're losing so many of them, as you said, that they just aren't able to make a living at this anymore.
Yeah. Okay, Chris, here's the point where I tell, okay, everyone, you're listening to me, right? It's not that far away. It's just down 55. You can go right out there. And it's cute too. Oh my. And there's an apple orchard south of Montrose. It's in her district. You can time it. You go do some door knocking for her this fall. Go pick some apples. You'll have a great time with this. We need to get the volunteers. Help your local DFLer. But if you're in a relatively safe district, you need to get out to 29, because that the dynamics of that district are changing now as the city grows. It's a district that we can definitely put a good, strong challenge up in, and I think that we can win, but we need to get the volunteers out there, and we need to get the donations to Chris Brazelton so that she can help get that DFL win for us in 29. So, Chris, if they want to find your website, where do they find where they can donate, where they can volunteer?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much. That's very sweet. Well, my website is Brazelton, that's Brazelton, for MN Senate. And there's a donate link to Act Blue for donations on that website. I have a Facebook page, you know, Brazelton for MN Senate. So, you know, there's a lot of, it's easy to find me, and it's easy to find our district. Just come on out Highway 12. You get, you know, a little bit past Ridgedale, and, you know, you're out here, and my in-laws refer to this as, like, Delano is a Hallmark town. So these are very nice people here, and it's a good district, but it does tend to lean Republican. So if we want to see a DFL win, we really could use the support.
You need, if you knock on every door, you're going to win that district, and that's what it comes down to. You knock on every door, and it's a cute, as she said, it's a Hallmark-esque. A lot of those towns are very adorable. If you haven't been out there, go out there, enjoy that. Volunteer, donate, help Chris Brazelton win in Senate District 29. Just out to the west, of the metro area. This is not a far drive. This is very attainable. We can help her win in 29. Chris, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Oh, thank you so much, Matt. It's so nice of you to have me on.
My pleasure. Chris Brazelton as Senate District 29, Democrat of the day. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
I'm all right. Nobody but about me. Why you got to give me a fight?
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Patrick! I got fun for us, man. Maybe we need to do a live broadcast coming up here this summer here. Because I can't just go, can I borrow your kids? I can't do that. My kids are now older. I can't do the really young kid stuff. That's really fun. Because that's one of the best parts about having kids is doing the little kid stuff. Like, you know, bounce houses. The Twin Cities of Spring will be a host to the traveling attraction that dubs itself the world's biggest bounce house theme park. The Bounce House America will be setting up its attractions at Aquila Park in St. Louis Park. That's right off Minnetonka Boulevard, right kind of by Texas, I think it is.
Sounds about right.
Somewhere around there. The theme park comprises a number of different inflatable experiences, well, including the world's biggest bounce house. Now even bigger than ever before. And that's what it says in the news story. Like, this, when did we miss this breaking news? Sports Slam, a competitive sports arena. The Giant, America's biggest inflatable obstacle course. Airspace, out of this world inflatables. I hope that doesn't like launch kids into orbit. There are a series of options for tickets, and you know, ticket holders will get dedicated time slot in the world's biggest bounce house. 3 hours of unlimited access to Sports Slam and Airspace. We should do a live broadcast out there, man.
Let's do it.
I'm all for that action. Also, if you're going to do something like that, go do something at the bounce house. Don't try to do a TikTok thing. Because I've seen this one, and this is a horrible story. I saw this because I've seen this thing on TikTok, and it kind of is shocking how it's relatively dangerous. Police have gotten to the bottom of the mysterious deaths of a Wisconsin couple whose bodies were found in their burned-out home early this month. The Marathon County Sheriff's Office said the deaths of James Carolfi, 52, and Tanya Rodriguez, 44, were initially unexplained after the fire of April 6th in their home in the town of Day. But in an update last week, the sheriff's office says the couple were dead before the fire started. Their deaths were caused by electrocution as they attempted the art of fractal wood burning, an art form that has become popular on social media sites like TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube. Do you know what this is? Have you heard about this?
I only learned about it because I saw this story when it was released last week, and I kind of went,
ugh. So what it is you take a high voltage electricity, and if it's certain treated wood, you can just take, you know, the open cord, put it on the wood, and it creates this weird pattern that can look like a tree, or it can just look like a streak that's going through it because it's burning through the wood. Because it's electricity. It can kill you. Fractal wood burning sees a high-voltage electrical application to wood, creating lightning effect burns or tree-like patterns in wood that have been soaked in a chemical solution. Through the investigation, it was determined that the fire started in the garage before spreading to the home. We believe the fractal wood burning equipment that caused the electrocutions likely caused the structure fire, you think? The fractal wood burning process typically uses a high voltage transformer, often repurposed from a microwave oven. What?
Yeah, that's the part that I was like, there is no way you know enough about what you're doing to be disassembling a microwave for this.
Your first step is to start disassembling. I guarantee you someone's not going to be happy with you. You start disassembling your microwave. You flow current across wood items that have been soaked in chemical solution. This process is highly dangerous. Should only be done by trained professionals, it adds. But because people see it, I saw it on TikTok. Well, the guy looks like he's been doing it for 40 years. I can do it. Where's my microwave? No, don't do that. A Farmington, Minnesota man died in similar circumstances while attempting woodcrafting at his girlfriend's home in Chaska in 2020. Don't do that, man. I have a fear of electricity. As a matter of fact, I don't wear any rings around a radio station. I don't. And the reason why is because I work, when I was in the military, I was what was called a rat rig operator. I was in the U.S. Army. I know at one point I was your first line of defense. Maybe I can make the enemy laugh. I don't. never mind. I was a rat rig operator, radio and teletype rig. And we had these generators that went with our trucks. And this is where I learned that electricity is a wild thing that you should not mess with. We would set up our generator. We'd ground it. We'd do all this stuff. And it's still electricity would be, you know, it does. It has its own game plan, man. And I saw a massive arc come off our generator one time and went and started a tree on fire that we were parked near. Ugh. I was not a fan. I was not a fan. And it kind of freaks you out when you see something like that where you're like, whoa, that's kind of like mad scientist lab sort of thing. You know what I mean? When something electrical goes bad in my house, I'm like, well, we'll call someone. We'll call an electrician out here. I'll have the electrician come out here because I've been around electricity. I had to do some service on electrical things. I know a little bit about it. I'm not touching it, man, because I've got respect for it. I know what it can do. I'm surely not. Grab the microwave. I need to strip it down for parts. No, I'm not doing that. Dear Lord, just, yeah, be careful with stuff like that, for goodness sakes. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Matt is in Minneapolis. Wanted to chime in on electricity. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how are you doing?
All right, my friend.
Okay. So we're auditioning in junior high school for the all-school show with my band, the Hot Rats, and we're going to do I'm 18 by Alice Cooper. And usually I'm a drummer, but this time I'm playing a bass guitar and I'm singing. So I touch my bass guitar, and the auditorium PA is on. And so we get up there in front of the drama and, you know, some of these teachers, and the first thing I do is grab the microphone, and the ground between my amp and the microphone was not right, and I grabbed it and I went OS, and then I let go and I was just shaking, and the drama teacher, in a real smug, she stood up and said, "So is this part of your act?"
Yes, electrocution. Okay, wait, I got to go back to something here. The name of your band was Hot Rats?
Yeah, after the Frank Zappa record.
Absolutely outstanding. You weren't injured by the electrocution, were you?
Well, it sent some shots into my body.
Ugh.
I'm serious. And that was, ever since, you know, I'm just like, oh, man. I will not, you know, that was in 70s. That was 70.
I was early 90s for me. Man, I will not touch that stuff. I will not. No. It has a mind of its own, man. And it will kill you. And the thing which I remember is there was a guy that was in the military, not in our unit. He was a different unit in the Nuremberg area. And he had that happen. He got zapped pretty bad. And he didn't die, but it kind of cooked part of him. And you're like, yikes. And no. I'm done with that. I'm good. I don't need to go down that road again.
Okay, groovy. I'll talk to you later, dude.
Talk to you later. I hope the Hot Rats will be, if they're playing somewhere soon, that'll be a good deal. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'm dead serious, man. Do not mess with electricity. Do not mess with electricity. A Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Wednesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 1,369 newly reported cases, 5 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 12,499. Tuesday's update includes case data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. Tuesday, April 26. The coronavirus variant that is currently dominant is the BA2 one, and obviously it's causing a lot of problems, in the metro area. You didn't catch the Star Tribune story this morning. They have now determined that 6 in 10 Minnesotans have actually had COVID. 6 in 10. You know, I want to remind everyone, because this was the Republicans repeatedly keep saying this wasn't bad. I don't know of many diseases that will impact 60% of a population. Like I said, we're almost at 12,500 deaths in the state of Minnesota. Was it Scott Jensen said this only 5% of the population was really susceptible? No, it's 60%. And it should show you. And by the way, if you look at the story, and I encourage you, I posted it up on the social media pages a little earlier. One of the things it shows is it was bad prior to Omicron, but Omicron was wickedly addictive. I don't say addictive. It was infective. It was contagious. That's the word I'm thinking of. Wildly contagious. That the Omicron just went and swept across. And anyone who wasn't vaccinated, anyone who was susceptible, they got it. And that's how you get to 60%. More people in the state of Minnesota, including yours truly, have had COVID than have not. Now, have we had the Republicans coming on out yet and said, that's not true. It's no worse than the seasonal flu. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Through April 26th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota still keeps going up. 259, that's up from 255 reported yesterday. Of those hospitalized, 28 people are in intensive care, up from 20, 231 in 9 ICU care. That's actually down from 231. As of April 24th, the state reported that 3,904,993 people have received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. 3,697,729 people have completed their vaccine series. And there are 2,556,518 Minnesotans up to date with their vaccine shots. Total number of people that have at least been reported is 1,448,539. But once again, the scientific data now is showing that it's actually closer to 60% of the population. Estimates show the breadth of impact from the winter Omicron wave just exploded across the country. And part of that is the fact that there are a lot of people that are testing positive and they don't let anyone know. And a lot of people say these numbers right now are just absolute garbage, because unless people are reporting they're getting sick, you're going to get grossly undercounted the amount of people that are ill with COVID. And it brings up, once again, there are long-term effects here that we're still trying to understand. I mean, once again, all our best to Lindsey Port, the great senator from the South Metro. She had a fairly serious medical incident yesterday in the state capitol. She's at home resting now. She's doing better. Lindsey, all my best, my friend. I hope you're feeling better soon. But that she's of course, was featured recently in the Star Tribune on an article talking about long COVID. And that's a real thing. And there are people that I'm known that have had long COVID since August of 2020. They've had COVID since then. And it's just not gone away. It is terrifying to think about. We are going to have a portion of the population who are going to be sick for an extended period of time for this. And still, we just, you know, because Republicans don't want to care about this and don't want to care about their fellow human being as they scream they're Christian. Yeah, it's only gonna stick around longer and longer and longer. Shortly, here's another problem that came up. This is kind of an interesting one. Shortly after he served on jury in March, Greg Crumley developed a sore throat and congestion. The retired molecular biologist took a rapid test on Saturday, saw a dark, thin line materialize, wildly positive for the coronavirus. Crumley, 71, contacted his doctor Tuesday. As later by the afternoon, friends had dropped off a course of Paxlovid, a 5-day regimen of antiviral pills that aims to keep people from becoming seriously ill. The day he took his last dose, the symptoms were abating. He tested each of the next 3 days, all negative. Then in the middle of a community Zoom meeting, he started feeling sick again. Crumley, who is vaccinated and boosted through it, might be a residual effects of his immune response to the virus, but the chills were more prolonged and unpleasant. He tested positive again. Crumley, like other patients who have experienced relapses after taking Paxlovid, is puzzled or concerned. On Twitter, physicians and patients are engaging in a real-time group brainstorm about what might be happening with scant evidence to work with. And the latest twist and the newest riddle in the pandemic, a reminder that 2 years in, the world is still on a learning curve with coronavirus. Infectious disease experts agree that this phenomenon, the virus rebounding after some patients take the drug, appears to be real but rare. Exactly how often it occurs, why it happens, and what, if anything, to do about it remains a matter of debate. What's clear is that patients should be warned if it is possible so they don't panic and that they know they'll be tested again if they start feeling ill. I'm not negative on Paxlovid, said Crumley, who lives in Philadelphia and whose latest positive test last week for his second wave of illness began. I don't know whether it is just stopping viral replication or that 5-day period of time and it comes back. Yeah, it's these things. Someone told me they had COVID feet. I'm like, what is that? And they haven't gotten back to me. Redness, sore. Michael Charnas, chief executive staff of the VA Boston healthcare system, published a detailed case study of one 71-year-old patient who had a relapse. The man, who was vaccinated and boosted, received Paxlovid and quickly felt better. When he developed cold symptoms a week later after his case of COVID had resolved, researchers sequenced the virus's genetic code, found it was the same virus surging back. That ruled out reinfection, the emergence of the variant of the virus becoming resistant. Charnas would like to see more data on other answers questions. So basically what his research showed is on this one patient was that the Paxlovid wasn't actually curing you. It just was putting the form of COVID you had in a bit of remission. And the minute you stopped it, it came back full force. We are going to be dealing with this for decades. We will. And as long as there are parts of this country where there ain't going to get no vaccine, as long as we have that, we are going to have outbreaks in small towns where all of a sudden you're going to have, you know, 60 people, 70 people sick, and the same people who are screaming, get your government out of our town, be like, why isn't the government in here helping us? Why not? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Moving away from the coronavirus update, how about the gun update for the day? Dear Lord. God, this is just sad. This is just sad. A man was killed in Candiohi County after the apparent accidental discharge of a gun. The Candiohi County Sheriff's Office said he was called to a house on the 10,000 block of 165th Avenue Southwest in Lake Lillian around 8:30 p.m. on Tuesday. The wife of a 64-year-old man said the firearm discharged accidentally, striking him in the head. The victim's name has not been released. It's not clear who had control of the gun at the time the shot was fired. The incident remains under investigation by the Sheriff's Office of the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. Accidental shootings account for hundreds of deaths nationally each year. In the last full year for which data is available, 2020, there were 535 deaths linked to unintentional shootings, according to Pew Research. Or, as Republicans will like to say, you gotta crack a few eggs. That's 535 eggs. Gotta crack a few. And that's just the accidental shootings, I think, of the individual. I don't think that counts the accidental shootings of when someone accidentally shoots someone else. I gotta ask the question, okay? You're in Candiohi County. You're in Lake Lillian. What the hell are you carrying around a loaded weapon for in the first place, man? Is crime that bad there? Seriously, do you have a blood oath? Is there someone trying to kill you or something? Is that what's going on? Or is that just stuff going on in your freaking noggin? Is the reason? Because there's a legitimate question. Why? You're in Candiohi County, man. I can't imagine it's the the Wild West out there. Is it? Does it make you? Does it make you feel like you're stronger or more of a person? Is it? You know, so you can impress people or scare people. Whatever happens, you don't care. I don't understand this. I was in the military. And I've said, here's my mentality on guns. I grew up in a hunting family. I have no problem with hunting weapons. When someone sat down and drew the weapon out, the weapon was designed to shoot a duck or a pheasant or a deer. I don't have a problem with that. I would not have one, but I do understand why some people get personal defense pistols. I don't have a problem with someone having a personal defense pistol that has 6 rounds in the chamber. I don't. Although I question why you would need it in most of our state. Because it's not the hordes coming over the hills that you have to start shooting the zombie apocalypse. No, you don't need it. And it's far more likely an accident, a tragic, horrible accident will happen. Bullets don't care. They will kill no matter who they hit. And in this case, it hit the individual who had the gun. You guys got to get over your paranoid fantasies, man. Your paranoid fantasies are killing you. Why in the world are you carrying on Lake Lillian? You're going to go, what, shoot the lake? Is the lake been mouthing off to you and someone needs to show it who's boss? What's going on, man? I don't get this. And maybe I'm a little bit freaking jaded because of that story out of South Carolina. And if you've not seen the video, it is heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for me because my son, Charlie, he played Little League baseball all throughout his life. He loved baseball, still loves baseball. He played baseball. And here is a scene at a South Carolina Little League field where gunfire erupts. And here are a bunch of kids. There's a kid coming up to bat. And, you know, they pillars in the field. And all of a sudden you hear the gunfire go up. The catcher stands up, realizes it, and starts running. Kids are in the field lying flat down. The kid with the bat clearly is terrified. They're at a freaking baseball game, man. And you Republicans, all you pro-gun kooks, this is your world. You have said guns everywhere and we won't ever have any problems again. It'll be the safest country on the planet. And you couldn't be further from the truth. We are a far less safe place. We have gunfire every freaking place. Yeah, people running around out in Lake Lillian with guns accidentally shooting themselves. And here you have a little league. None of those kids are going to be okay. Ever. Again. Ever. The gun didn't make them safer. And I know right away all the Republicans came running out. It's like, well, we got to get the illegal guns off the street. How do you know those were illegal guns? You're hoping they were illegal guns. That's one thing I've noticed about gun crimes is they scream as quickly as possible. Well, there had to be illegal guns. No, they didn't. Because it's really, really freaking easy to get guns in this country. You're trying to make this argument that the guns, which are basically in freaking vending booths out in the South, you can get a Coke and a gun. And you act as if there's some mystery. How did the guns get in the hands of the wrong people? Because you made it available to them. You have no idea if all the guns or any of those guns were illegal guns. You just hope they are. You label them illegal guns as a way to sort of say, well, if they were legal guns, none of this would have happened. Bull crap. If they were illegal guns or illegal guns, there was a gunfight at a Little League park. And you've scarred young children for life. Trust me, go look at those kids, terrified young children. The gun did not make them feel safer. But this is the world that you have created. Because now you can make the argument, well, what you should do now is go arm yourself. All those kids on the baseball field should have had a gun. Then they could have returned fire and been safe. Yeah, really? This is the gun kooks' dream world. We've done every damn thing they've wanted to. And they have always promised us one thing. We will be much safer with all these guns. And it could not be further from the truth. We are far less safe than we've ever been. Because guns are everywhere. And they're not illegal. They're easy to get. You can buy them on frickin' line. You can buy them in shows. There's no background checks half the damn time. It's just as all of a sudden you guys all of a sudden have egg on your face when all of a sudden the guns are not being used in a safe manner, but they're used for a freaking gunfight at a Little League park. And so, well, those were the illegal guns. You have no damn clue, man. And even if they were legal, is there any law that says that that's a wrong thing? No. It's just as you've basically made it where guns everywhere. Your world sucks. Because if you have to live in a world where you have to carry a gun around because the zombie apocalypse might come and you might become the hero, the problem isn't whether or not you have a gun. The problem is you're a freaking loser. And you need to look in the mirror and say, I'm a freaking loser. I need to stop living in a fantasy world and start living in freaking reality. And then you don't need the damn gun. You can actually fix yourself out. Because all that gun's doing is giving you a false sense of bravado. That's it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Final segment before Native Roots Radio comes up here at 6 o'clock. The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I believe you. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. A marijuana legalization party is calling on changes from Minnesota's candidate ballot access law ahead of the 2022 election, a move they say could prevent deceitful or frivolous campaigns appearing on ballots. The grassroots legalized cannabis party wants all candidates for state office to be required to gather voter signatures in order to get their names on the ballot, which major party candidates don't have to do. The proposal comes in response to the 2020 election, where a number of people with GOP ties filed to run as candidates with the state's two major pro-legalization parties, in some cases to siphon votes away from the DFL. This was by design. The Marijuana legalization candidates played a significant role in key races in Minnesota during the last election, potentially aiding U.S. Representative Jim Hagedorn's re-election. Several of them, as well as helping Republicans maintain control of the Senate, several of them admitted to the involvement with the GOP, including Senate candidate in northeastern Minnesota who told the Reformer she was recruited to run for the marijuana ticket by a Republican. To appear on the ballot, major party candidates have to confirm they're eligible for office, that they either participated in the party's most recent caucuses or intended to vote for a majority of that party's candidates. The grassroots legalization marijuana party alleges 8 candidates, 2 who ran on their party ticket, 6 who filed with the legal marijuana now, falsely claimed they attended party caucuses in their candidate filings. There is no recourse for candidates who are dishonest about the party affiliation. Well, there should be, especially if they have to sign up for that. Minor party candidates are required to collect voter signatures, 10% of the number of voters who participated in the last election, or 500 total, whichever is less, to get their names on the ballot. So, no, this was, Republicans intentionally did this because they had to win at all costs. And there were a few people that alleged that Gazelko himself was recruiting these people out there to run in these races. It's clear what the result was. It's clear what the intent was. And they took advantage of the system. But, I would say the legalized marijuana party tickets, there's a reason why. You allowed this to happen. And there's a reason why now the DFL is legalized marijuana party. And, why would I go with your party that's got really no chance of making any change? The DFL's got a chance. So your parties, you're frantically trying to change the rules now because you don't want to be drubbed out of relevance. And... The DFL is doing what they need to do because no one's really going to vote for you on your one key issue if the other major party is going to basically do the same exact thing. They'll just stay with the same party. Republicans are dishonest. Always remember that. We're back tomorrow. Have a good one. Till then, see ya.